Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm here today with Ryan Matthews from World of Dog Training. He's a TEDx speaker working on a COVID detection dog. He got to start with military working dogs, and now he's trained over 3,000 dogs. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. I'm really happy to be here and super excited to see what we unpack today, what we discover on how we're going to help your audience out.
You know, it's crazy because we talked, and I know you do dog training, and I'm like, how are we going to like figure out how to talk to nonprofits and help them do things better by talking to a dog trainer? And I know you're not just a dog trainer. You're so much more. And I'm sure we'll peel back the layers of the ogre to find out just how deep it goes. But really, the thing you said that was really interesting to me is that training dogs and training and motivating people are really along the same lines and of the same cut of cloth. Is that right?
It is. And, you know, even so much so as my first TEDx talk, Overcoming PTSD Using Dog Training Techniques, where I interviewed different psychologists to bridge that gap, that this psychology can be correlated not just with dogs, but with people as well, which I thought was fascinating. It's like really, really exciting to have discovered that. Because I know people pretty well, but I know dogs extremely well. So for me, it was really fun to have some support in that.
That's really cool. And I know that my dogs do a great job of training me as an owner, because every time I see them, they're so excited. Their whole body is wagging. They're jumping up and down. I can't help but get excited when I see them. I'm not particularly an animal person. And some people are out there like, oh, Travis, how can you not be an animal person? I'm just not. Like, they're whatever. They're just like any other thing out there. But some, man, they just have the way of making you feel special. And especially when they train you by getting excited every time you see them, you can't help but get excited. So they do a good job of training me, but we're going to figure out how you train them. So what does that look like?
Well, I just want to touch on what you shared, which I can really agree and relate. And what's so interesting is that, you know, for me, Travis, I got into training dogs through, yes, the military, but doing it at this next level, because really I was very shut off from the world. I was shut off from my feelings. I was shut off from my heart, and I couldn't connect with human beings. And it wasn't until I began to open my heart to dogs that I began to tap into my feelings. You know, again, I trained bomb dogs overseas, and you know, I got pretty messed up after that experience. And I went through childhood trauma as well that exacerbated the trauma from combat. But, you know, the beautiful part was dogs was that one safe place for me to open up and feel and tap into my feelings and my emotions and my heart as well. And for that, I've dedicated my life to giving back to dogs and their owners to improve their quality of life. Because, I mean, it's kind of crazy, Travis, but really, I feel like dogs are here, they can teach us lessons. Because you mentioned it yourself about the enthusiasm. And that's the second TEDx talk that I did, was let's treat each other more like dogs. We're like, well, why would I want to do that? Well, overall, people treat their dogs really dang well, right? But I feel like we could learn so much. Because like, think about it. If we greet each other in a manner of like, oh, hey, what's going on, right? And it doesn't feel validating to the other human being. They're like, oh, they're not excited to see me. But then how do we greet our dogs? And then how do our dogs greet us? It's even more enthusiasm than how we do with a human being usually. And so I propose, like, what would our world and our relationships be like if we treated each other as human beings the same way we treat dogs?
Absolutely. And it's kind of funny that we're talking about this. So in my house, when my wife gets home from work, and especially if my son is home, we sprint across the house to see who's going to get the first hug. And really, we're acting like the dogs act when you come in, because they're running across the house to see you and they want to see you and get involved. But it has the effect, because my wife comes home, she's got a big smile on her face and she's happy to hug her guys and pretty excited about it. So
that's so cool, man. That's beautiful. Like, she feels very validated and very important. And so that's cool. You guys beat the dog to it. I like it.
Yeah. Run across the house. And, you know, because I'm bigger than my son, because he's 12, I'll do my best to push him out of the way so that I win. So he's going to really want it. You know what I mean?
Dad, why'd you lock me in my room again?
Well, that's for different reasons, but we won't get into that.
Oh, that's funny, man.
What I want to know is, how can you really motivate a dog? And what does that look like when we talk about motivating human beings?
Well, the first thing is knowing that it varies, right? And so like, what motivates you and what motivates me and what motivates your wife? And then what motivates, say, my grandmother? All four different human beings with four different opinions and individual minds and things that they're drawn towards and things that they want to avoid. And so it starts with number one, knowing what is that being, whether it's an animal or a person, what are they motivated by? Or what is their agenda? Maybe it's for money. Maybe it's for status. Maybe it's to receive, you know, love language, right? Words of affirmations. We call that positive reinforcement. It works with people. It works with dogs. So first, let's define what does that being working for, right? And so for a dog, it's like, okay, well, the dog is food motivated. Well, that's great. But there's a variety of foods out there. Is it green beans? Is it chicken? Is it cheese? Is it a milk bone? Like, what is it that motivates that animal?
It's definitely not green beans.
Yeah.
Green beans don't motivate anybody.
There was a client that I was like, what do you give your dog for snacks? And they said green beans. I was like, okay, like small cut up green beans. Okay. But anyways, I'm not here to judge it, right? It's like, it's their preference. That's important as well. You see, it's not what we think they should like or be drawn towards. It's what they truly are drawn towards. And the way we figure it out for a dog is we test and we say, here's a green bean and here's a piece of cheese. And we allow the animal and we pay attention to their head. Where does their head focus on? Because wherever their head is, that's where the interest lies, right? And that's where the mind is. And so that's how we can determine what that animal truly wants. So again, first it starts with using that highest value of motivator. And from there, you leverage that to get more of the behaviors that you want. And you do the same thing with the human being. Again, is it identifying what are they driven by? Is it the potential for raise? Is it for recognition and acknowledgement? Like, just get to know that human being. And there's a variety of ways we can do that. We can do, you know, Enneagram. We can do that through an interview process, through just communicating, and through observation as well. You can say, okay, I want to find out what motivates this human being. And you can test one of those motivators and see how that person responds through their body language, just like dogs as well. You know, dogs communicate about 93% nonverbal, and humans communicate a whole lot through nonverbal as well, as you know, Travis. And so again, it's just being very much in tune with that other being, whether it's a dog or a person, and taking notes, like genuinely caring. And then we're using that as information, as leverage to get more of the behavior we want, whether that's work performance or whatever it is.
I want to unpack this a little bit and see how this might apply to the nonprofit world, because really we're asking the question, what are you motivated by? What are you working for? And if you're talking about a dog, you're like, where's their head at? Right. Which way are they pointing? And really you can look at the human the same way, but you do it by testing. So when you're in the nonprofit world and you deal with donors, right? You interact with donors in what way? And what ways gets them excited? Is it seeing the impact that you're having? Is it recognition? Do they want their name up in lights? Some do, some don't, right? I've donated before and they're like, how would you like to be recognized? Which was wonderful. Like, would you like to be in our newsletter? Would you like to be in this? And at the time I was not very interested in recognition. I just wanted to help them out. Didn't care who knew about it. But that's not always the case. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? I did some pretty cool stuff. I want to see my name in lights. I better be at the top of that email. I want people to know what I did. It, you know, it just really depends on the day or where my self-esteem is at, but everyone's got a different thing. But something that we miss, especially in the nonprofit world, is testing. We want everything that we do to be perfect. It's always under some kind of scrutiny or some kind of public consumption. And it's almost that we've gotten scared to test different things to see how things are going to go. What is this type of fundraiser going to look like? And we look in the COVID times versus the before times, anytime before COVID, BC before COVID, is, is, you know, nonprofits largely did everything the same way, and there was no variation. And you had your annual event or your gala and what that might have looked like. And there was a couple of elements different, but really it largely looked the same. And then when COVID happened, people decided to change what they were doing, stop what they were doing, or try, you know, really expanding what they were going to do. And some nonprofit boards were not on board with this. And some were like, you know what, if we're not going to try something new, like if we're going to do it, why not now? Everyone's doing something different. Everything's trying something new. So we get a test to see what works, to see what kind of reaction we get. And, you know, interacting with donors is one thing. Interacting with volunteers is another. You know, some volunteers just want to show up and be part of the muscle and the sweat that goes into making something work, making the sweat equity. And that's enough for them. Some of them really need that feedback to keep moving along. Some need recognition, and some really want to be, you know, in the right place, not just a warm body, like, hey, there's someone standing there, go sit in the chairs. But what does that person really specialize in? I had a friend of mine that was he's a world-class marketer, and he went to kind of help out a nonprofit and do something. They asked him if he could do ads. And this is a guy that is legitimately world-class in marketing. Whatever you need, whatever whiz bang stuff you can do. They're like, hey, could you set up a thank you email? And he's like, I can. And what happened is very shortly after that, he ended up leaving the organization, not because, you know, of the question he was asked, but it was like asking the smallest possible thing from him, knowing that he's this world-class guy. And I'm not suggesting that they should have like taken advantage of the things that he could do for them. But, you know, like, hey, can you open that door? I can. Like, I'm very capable of opening the door for you. Hey, can you design this door, build it, install it, do all these things, put the cool stuff on? Yeah, that's what's going to get me excited as a person. And when you're at that level, making sure you're meeting them at the level that they are and the level of engagement they want to be at, that's what can really make the difference. So I like that you talk about testing and what people are motivated by, what they're working for.
You know, retention is a big thing with volunteers. And, you know, what's something for nonprofits to look at, right? And then what are we doing to maintain retention, to keep people coming back? And I think that that has to do with communication, getting to know, again, that human being. Maybe that's an intake form or something like that, of really getting to know what brings them there. And like in the instance of the gentleman, the marketer that you were mentioning, you know, I would imagine for him, he probably likes mental stimulation and to feel challenged and to use his gifts for good, right? But again, by asking something that's so small, it's like, sure, yes, like you said, can do it. However, it's not exciting because it's not challenging his brain. And when he's doing, like, he needs some form of payment as well, not monetarily, but maybe it's to feel good in his soul or in his heart, or leveraging again his gifts for good. But again, it's, I think, very important to pinpoint what is it that that human being wants. And as it relates to other volunteers, I would imagine there's a lot of fallout when there is a lack of onboarding and a lack of structure and organization, and treating everyone like the same, which you can't, because each person will want something a bit different. And again, by providing them what they want, then maybe it's like they don't get out of the house. Let them interact and greet the people and all the warm and fuzzy stuff. Others, again, maybe they're so used to they're very bored with their job. They're very high up with what they do. They're very skilled, but they kind of have their hands tied at work. And maybe this is something fun and challenging because they don't feel challenged at work. And I think that they'll have a much better outcome with volunteers if they can get to know those people and their skill sets better, and their motivators as well.
It's one of the things, you know, being active duty Navy that we come in contact with, is you get into a new command and you get put in a position not based on your skill, not based on your gifts, not based on, you know, what you're really good at or why it matters, but you get put in a position based on them needing to fill a hole. And it has nothing to do with you. And I remember being at a command, and they had me in a job that I was qualified for, and it was fine. And I did it. And they had me in a job that I was not qualified for. And it was kind of mediocre performance. And they thought they were sticking me in something hard to kind of, you know, really show me my thing. And I crushed it. I absolutely crushed this position. And this isn't a hoo-yah Travis thing. I'm so proud of you. But had they taken the time to get to know me at all and understand where my skill set is, they would have put me in that job that they needed help at initially. And I could have crushed it from them from day one, but they didn't know anything about me. They weren't utilizing my skills till, you know, my talent, skills, or abilities to their benefit or mine.
Which is a fun conversation or segue potentially to management and leadership, right? Because I think that that's what's kind of lacking there in their approach, which again is massive for most everything to include nonprofits. Absolutely.
You get bogged down in the tasks of the day and don't get time to step back and look at the bigger picture. You're going to miss a lot of things.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of my business partners and I say, like, we're only operators if we, and not business owners, if we are required to stay at our business for our business to do well. Like, if we can't be gone for 30 to 60 days and make the same amount of money with the same level of productivity and satisfaction of the customer, then we're simply an operator. We're not a business owner, and we're certainly not being leaders.
That's, oh, you don't know why I'm smiling. I could dive down this rabbit hole and we could talk for a week straight on just this, but I don't think the listeners would appreciate that off ramp. I'm just going to look at you and we're going to know that we know what we're talking about. So we looked at motivation first. What are they motivated by? What are they working for? What's next?
Well, after we figure out that motivator and what they're driven by, then it's a matter of also assessing their abilities, right? So, like, I have a Belgian Malinois, which is like a police or military working dog. And this is a breed that is like an athlete and extremely intelligent. And so that being, that animal, really wants to work. But if we look at like a lazy bulldog, you don't incentivize that animal the same way. They're not as drawn to do things for you. And they're kind of like, yeah, I can do it, but why should I? And I'm not all that interested in it. And so again, it's like having a realistic expectation of who's in front of you, whatever that dog is or whatever that person is. And again, that has to do with just getting to know them on because some humans have just so much potential. I do believe in limitless potential, but sometimes the mindset and conditioning and things like that can get in the way, right? And sometimes it's also not worth it. Like, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? So like, if we did invest X amount of time in training a dog or a person, is it really worth it? You know, maybe they only stay with us for a month or, you know, many years. And if it's many years, then it is worth investing in the time to train them. But for me, it's a matter of, once we figure out the motivator, is assessing their abilities. What are they capable of? How much time and effort are we going to invest into them to train them up and that kind of thing, which really matters. So it's being very clear also on what they'll be doing, which is in direct correlation as to their training that they should be receiving and the guidance that they would get.
You know, there's an interesting thing floating around management circles. They talk about, you know, investing in your employees and making sure that they get the training they need, they get the education that they need, whatever the thing that is to need to be successful. And some people with closed off limited mindsets were like, well, what happens if I spend all this time in training them and they leave? And then the retort to that is, well, what if you don't train or educate them and they stay?
Right.
Why would you want people that aren't trained and educated to do what they need to do? Clogging up your business, your nonprofit, whatever your thing is, because you didn't feel like investing in them. And they know when they're not invested in. You know, I always talk about one of the things, like the benefits of this podcast is if you invest in yourself and learning new things, new skill set, meet new people, expand the network, whatever the thing is, there's always a return on investment. It's always worth your investment to invest in yourself. And the same goes with the people in your organization. It is always worth that investment because you only get better as a group. And why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And one of those investments is time, right? And so, and it's the same thing with a dog. Like, it doesn't train itself. People don't train themselves. You got to have a system, right? And so that's like for me, that's known as RCTR. It's the way you can train most any dog. It's a system. And the same holds true within an organization, is to have the systems in place. And that's where I've been faulty, Travis, is, you know, I brought on virtual assistants and managers and this kind of thing, but I failed to invest the time into them, into training them. And I didn't have the systems in place. And so therefore I created, you know, my own bottleneck from the lack of, you know, following the systems, creating the system, should I say, first, and then following them and the protocols in that. So I think, again, it also really matters that we're starting it off the right way with having things in place. Because if you're just going about it haphazardly without any kind of guidance or direction, then who knows as to the results and the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, you were in the military. You fall to your highest level of preparation. I released an interview back in, I think it was the last week of March, that was Greg Brooks from Rocket Station. And he talks about virtual assistants. They have a virtual assistant company, and you have to have so many hours on board. It's legit. It's like $10 an hour to get these people hired, but you've got to have at least 20 hours a week, give them something to do. But you can't just hire them. They have an onboarding process to understand and work out the systems in your business or your nonprofit or whatever have you, because they want to deliver the best product for you. And if your systems aren't in order, they can't give you what you want, and you'll end up not liking the company or not liking the virtual assistant because you're not getting what you want, but you don't know how to get what you want. So they run you through the process of creating what you do, your processes, your procedures, what are your inputs are, what your outputs are, and what a timeline looks like, so they can give you what it is you need and actually be helpful. So I definitely understand what you're struggling with there. If you didn't have the processes down the way you wanted to, or the way they needed to be done.
It's kind of like slowing down to speed up, right? It's like you got to just take the time and kind of, right? And go back to the basics and create the systems. And then from there, you can scale up, which, again, this works with dog training as well, is you have the system that you're going to apply. And with whatever it is that you want to teach or have the animal learn, same thing, you just apply the system. But the system has to be in place.
I've been in charge of just about anything I've been attached to since I was 15. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just my winning personality or what have you, but I always end up being in charge. I don't know if it's like no one else wants to be in charge. Like, I guess we'll put Travis in charge. But you know, getting people motivated and training them as a trainer, like, you are not the leader just to be the person that answers their questions all day. Hey boss, I got a question on so-and-so. Your job is not to answer the question. Your job is to train them how to answer their own question. And if they're coming to you with the same problem over and over, then your policies, procedures, or training have a gap in them that hasn't answered their question, or you haven't trained them to bring a solution to you instead of problems. I know if you jump into US politics right now, you see people talking about a lot of problems, but no one's really offering up solutions. And therefore, nothing really gets done. It's the same in business. If they're bringing you all their problems, I forget who it was who has this concept. All your employees are walking in your office with a monkey on their back, and their goal is to put it on your back and walk out without a monkey. Like, you know, your job as the boss is not to accept the monkeys that they give you, right? What questions they need answered, but to empower them to come back with their own solutions. So when people come to me, you know, time dependent, situation dependent, I'm like, well, give me three proposals of what you think this is going to look like. And they have to be proposals that make sense. And they go that, they do that, they do the work, and they come back and they're frustrated. Like, why do I have to do all this work? This doesn't make sense. Why couldn't you just tell me the one, right? But this time that they put into dedicating to figuring out this problem, they're understanding what the problem really is, because rarely is the problem brought forth really the problem. We don't have any money. Not having money is not the problem. Not having money is a symptom of a problem. Your fundraising practices, your donor engagement, your follow-up letters, the messaging that you're doing, that's the real problem. The not having money is just a symptom, but we don't feel that way. We feel like that's the problem, which is not. But the employee goes through the slog of figuring out these three things. You're like, well, what would you consider? Not only is, why should I say yes to this one? Why is this one the best one? This was your first offering when you brought it back to me. Why is this still the best one? And if it is the best one, what were you wasting your time on these other ones for? and you get them to understand what it is you're looking for in the problem. And this is the same way, in any system. I had a guy just come to me the other day, like, this person always kind of beats us up, you know, in public, or CC and the boss and all the department heads. Like, how do I get them to stop beating me up? Like, well, what are they pinging you on, and how do you solve their problem before it gets to them? It's a problem in the process that you're missing, that it leaks out and gets to them because they keep hitting you on the same thing. So how do you fix the problem upstream from where it gets to them and they blast you over all the channels? And he was like, ah, now I understand. And this is a little bit of military speak, but this is how you get promoted, is you figure out how to do your boss's job. And that's really the same thing that we're talking about. Once you figure out how you do your boss's job, it's a no-brainer to promote you. And why wouldn't they?
The concept that you're speaking of, where you encourage someone to get the answer themselves, it's the highest level of dog training. And it's how they actually train parrots and cats and dolphins and dogs as well. And we call it free shaping. So free shaping is where the animal comes up with the answer on their own. Again, that's why part of what matters is the motivator. The animal needs to try and say, is it this? Is it that? Kind of like a game of hot and cold. And so as the animal is beginning to offer behaviors, meaning do behaviors, saying like, is it a sit? Is it a down? Is it a spin? What is it that you wanted me to do? Is it to go away, to come towards you, to raise my paw? What was it? And as we give reinforcement, positive reinforcement, once the animal does that thing that we want, we are then going to get more of that. And again, it's called free shaping, and it's very similar. With free shaping, you don't give any answers to the animal, nothing. The only thing you do is, once they do approximation of what you want, you're giving encouragement through a reward, whatever it is, that motivator that they want. And again, same thing with the person's, not really giving the answer, but giving the positive feedback as they get warmer towards the solution and the answer, which I think is pretty fun and pretty cool crossover.
I did my master's work in human relations, and I forget who it was. I want to say it was Carl Rogers that really created the humanistic, the client-centered approach to therapy. He said, look, if advice worked, there wouldn't be any psychologist. So all the advice we go around asking for our friends, and the human-centered, like, talk therapy approach, is to get them to realize how to solve their own problem. You're paying someone or going to a thing to get them to figure out really that the problem is, generally speaking, not always, generally speaking, within the person that's coming in for. And they have to realize and recognize and adjust their thoughts, behaviors, feelings, actions to align with the outcome that they want. So yeah, very interesting. I never heard that before. Free shaping. That's cool.
Yeah. What's so cool about that approach as well is that we as the handler, right? We as the trainer, or we as the leader, when we don't give the answer, then the being, whether that's the dog or the employee or volunteer or whatever, then owns the knowledge, right? Because if we taught it, they can, yes, regurgitate it, but do they own the knowledge? Meaning they could teach someone else. Well, that's in question, but it's going to be repeatable as they can successfully, continuously, over and over and over, do the right thing and come up with the solution on their own. Then they own the knowledge and own the process, and then they feel empowered, and then they'll want to do more of that.
Oh, so they have to own the knowledge in order to feel empowered and then do it on their own?
Yeah, it starts with doing it on their own. Right. And then it's like, ooh, now I start to feel empowered. And then from empowered comes the confidence. And then they could actually teach someone else.
That is very interesting. Everyone listening right now, if you didn't understand how huge of a knowledge bomb that was, go back, hit the 30 seconds back, re-listen to that. Giving someone the answers is not going to help them get it done. It'll help them get it done in the moment. Once they forget the process of what it looks like to find that answer, they just can come back to you. And now it's still your problem and not their problem. Nice. What's next, Ryan? What you got else?
Well, we talked about the motivator. We talked about, know who we're working with, that being, right? Well, then what happens is, so then we talked about, like, now we're empowered, right? They're empowered. Well, maybe now we're getting bored. Okay. Because now it's no longer challenging. And that thing that was new, no, it's just good old everyday kind of thing. It's no big deal. It's no longer engaging and challenging. And so as it becomes mundane, then you got to spice it up a bit, right? And so like with a dog, and then we'll translate to people, you need to train in different environments. If it's the same picture, if you will, meaning same environment, it's not stimulating, it's not engaging, dog will lose interest, get bored, and you're not going to get the wins, meaning opportunity to reward the animal for doing the thing you want. They're like, yeah, I already been here, done that. I already know what it is. So by creating a new environment, it creates more stimulation and becomes a bit more challenging. And there's a cool study in a lab where they would give freebie food to pigeons. Then they would also require a different segment of pigeons to have to work. They would have to peck onto this device. It would make a sound or something like that. Then when they did that, they would get the food. They found that the pigeons actually wanted to work. They wanted the stimulation. And the ones that just had it here free, take the food, they begin to lose interest. And that's why using scarcity is also a good thing, is we don't want to just give things too lavishly. We want to keep our dogs, our employees, our volunteers eager, on the seat of their pants, by not always giving them everything and anything that they want. Okay, there needs to be a bit of scarcity. And in dog training, we call this a variable reward schedule, meaning, yes, you will get rewarded, but when I teach you something new, you're going to get rewarded all the time. But when it's no longer new, to again, create this excitement and engagement, I'm then going to give you the reward, but you never know when I'm going to give it to you. You will get it, but you never know if it's 2 times from now or 100 times from now. But I promise you, you'll get it. And so then the animal's like, okay, well, I'm going to do the thing because maybe it's this time. It's kind of like gambling, right? You gamble because you're like, maybe next time I'm going to win. And dang, I lost. Okay, next time, let's go. Let's just bet it all right here on these 6 lines, $1 each, you know, on the slots, right? It's like, oh, okay, maybe the next one, right? It keeps them engaged through the scarcity, right? And so, and I mean, who knows psychology of humans better than a casino? I mean, they study that stuff to the umpteenth degree, right? Like, it's crazy how much they understand. So anyways, we can use that as well with humans is some of the scarcity and keeping things engaging. And maybe that's by changing up the office. Maybe that's by creating the appreciation barbecues and things like that, is change it up. Same thing over and over and over. It's going to get mundane. Things are going to lose interest. Got to keep it spicy to keep people engaged and stimulated mentally and physically.
So Frederick Taylor was famous for studying work, studying the industrial cycle and what that looked like. And they thought that, you know, certain changes would have certain effects on a group of people. And this was studied famously in the Hawthorne studies. And they had a group of workers and they increased the lighting, the brightness of the lights. And they found that the workers worked harder. And then they thought when they decreased the light that they would work less hard, but it turns out all they needed to work hard was change, because even when they decreased the lighting below regular levels, they worked harder yet still. It was the change of environment that had that effect on what they were doing.
It's fun. It blows my mind how there's so many similarities and crossovers with the way that we can train a dog and how we can train, interact, and shape humans.
That's very interesting. I don't train my dogs at all other than open the back door so they can run outside and use the restroom. That's it. They just lay around. They're excited when I see them. They're currently napping to the sweet, sweet tones of my voice, even though it's the middle of the day.
Are these labs?
No. I don't know what they are, but they're tiny dogs. One, I'm pretty sure, is a Chihuahua mix of some variety. Although she weighs like 4 times as much as a Chihuahua should. And and then we have like, what does my wife call it? Like a Pikachu or Pika-lopsa poodle, something or other. Small, white, fluffy dog who is twice as big as her father. She was trying to get a super tiny dog. And the dog immediately outgrew the dad in like 6 months. And she's like, I wanted a tiny dog. What the heck? Like, she's still small. She's like, yeah, but looks like Falcor, you know, we'll go sort of the vent with the ears flapping. Looks like she's flying. Pretty fun. But they're just chill for the most part.
Well, what's interesting about dogs is I often say that like energy runs down leash. So it's quite common that our dogs are our reflection of us. They can mirror us, right? So for your dogs to be chill, I would imagine your household is pretty chill and comfortable and pretty relaxing type of environment as well. It's definitely not a chaotic environment, or your dogs would be very wild.
Well, that's quite the compliment. So I've never met Ryan in person. And those of you that do know me in person know that I do not allow anyone that's toxic or causes drama in my world ever. If you invite you over and you create problems of any way, shape, or form, you're no longer invited or welcome in my house. Doesn't matter who the heck you are. You could be an elected official or my sister. Like, you're not allowed to behave that way in my world. So I like that. Good correlation.
That's powerful. Yeah, that's powerful. No, but really it's valuable for your audience to hear, because we can use our animals as a guide, right? Like, so dogs acting up, like, so I tend to say, okay, so was a dog like this before acting this way? No. Cool. What changed in your life? And they can pretty quickly say, yeah, I'm going through a divorce, or we just lost so-and-so, or right now I'm in turmoil with such and such. It's weird. But there are direct correlations.
You know, when we look at that and what happens in the dog world when there's a big change in our life, think about how that also happens in our organizations. If the boss is having a bad day, right, is the boss able to come in and be level-headed, or are they sharing their emotions with the people they work for? And you can see this all the time. You can see I had a boss that a lot of people didn't like, but no matter what was going on in the world, in his life, anywhere else, he was always the same. He treated everybody with the same little spike at the end of his tongue. He operated the same way. He held people to high standards, and you can depend on that. And if you all have also seen those leaders that if they didn't get the right amount of sugars in their coffee, oh Lord, everyone better look out, because he's a toddler and he's going to have a tantrum about it. And you better watch out. Those are my favorite kind of people, because I don't tolerate that kind of business, no matter who the heck they are, which is very interesting. I've had a couple of nonprofit leaders that don't like what I have to say, which I'm perfectly okay with them being wrong. And they'll say something to me and be like, in what way, shape, or form do you think this is appropriate behavior? Well, I don't really, blah, 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 blah. Like, did you have a bad day? So did millions of other people. Let's work through it, talk through it. But you're not allowed to treat me like that. I really don't care what happened.
Yes, it's healthy boundaries. So what we're talking about, Travis, is like leadership and boundaries. And guess what, friends? Like, we need that in our organizations, and we need that with our pets as well. And you know, what's interesting is a lot of celebrities or high achieving executives who I work with, they have all of that professional life in order, but their personal lives is where there are no boundaries and their dog does whatever and they're at a loss. And it's because they aren't applying what they know to do well professionally with their household, with their pets. And so I'm really interested in having the conversation of leadership. And so as it relates to like leadership and why that matters with our pets is, well, number one, dogs are born to follow. And if we think about our volunteers in a nonprofit, they must be led. They have to have a leader and guidance and direction, or what are they supposed to do? Same thing when someone comes to the house. Your dog doesn't know what to do if you don't give the guidance and direction. Same thing on day one or day 20 of a volunteer. They come and they're like, now what should I do next? They need that leader to give them the guidance and direction. Now, when we talk about like this ideal leader, well, what is that? And you alluded to it. And that is one that is, I think, fair. They are consistent. So like, they don't show preferences. They're reliable. You can count on them. And they provide an environment of safety. Because see, if a person or an animal doesn't feel safe, then it's hard to learn. It's hard to be productive. And it's hard to want to come back, right? And so that's very important, is to the environment that leader creates. Because when coming from a place of safety, that's an opportunity environment for those to thrive, right? And so that, I think, very much matters. I know that really matters as well. And also leadership that's firm when appropriately. And that's what you were mentioning, Travis, as it relates to the boundaries. This firmness is not a bad thing. it's necessary because beings, people and dogs, will act out of order. And it's because of, like you said, some of their conditioning from childhood, having it their way, and they come into contact with other human beings that have self-respect and understand balance and health and these types of things and say, well, no, that's not appropriate here. And that's okay. That firmness, I feel, is okay. And it's also a leader that that being, again, dog or person, can feel safe so that they can also begin to be a bit of themselves, right? Because, you know, being under the thumb, that's not a place of empowerment and thriving. But as they start to learn the ways, allow them to be themselves and explore and discover some of their own curiosity. And that's where they have an opportunity to grow and be promoted and this type of thing. And so I think that this is some really, really fun things to look at for leadership, again, whether it's with a pet or within an organization.
You know, and this applies to your troops and it applies to your dollars. If you don't give your troops something to do, they're going to cause problems. And if you don't give your dollars a job, they're just going to wander off into the wilderness and you won't have them anymore. You have to have that tone, that leadership, that direction and expectation so they know what they're doing every day. It's, I mean, the three D's of leadership, right? Delegate, delegate, disappear. You have to tell them what it is they need to do and you need to get out of their way so they can do it.
And in doing that, again, that's empowering them and it's helping them come up with, so because when we're not present, then they get stuck. But if they're able to solve the problem themselves, again, moving towards empowerment, moving towards, ooh, I can do this. And they're going to want to take on more because they'll have an increase in confidence and they'll feel confident in your confidence in them as well, which is pretty cool.
That's perfect. What else do you want to share with our audience today, Ryan?
Well, I want to share the ways in which you can train any dog and tie some of that into humans as well. And then from that, I just will, you know, offer myself to your audience and whoever would want to connect. So are you comfortable with me sharing RCTR, which is what I talked about in the first TEDx talk? And it's the way you can train most any dog and it works for people too.
What is that acronym again?
Yep. So RCTR stands for repetition, consistency, timing, and reward. And so if you want, I can break that down.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so when we want to teach a new behavior, one repetition won't teach it at all. Just like going to the gym one time and getting one rep in doesn't do anything for you.
What? I can't go to the gym once and come back all sexy and buff?
Yeah, you're like, that's what I've been doing wrong the whole time, right?
I went to the gym 3 years ago. What the heck? I guess that one push-up I did last year did nothing.
I thought it would last longer than that. So you gotta, to create the habit and to create whatever it is that you want, the behavior, again, whether it's habit or outcome, you have to repetitiously do it over and over again. And the same holds true when we're teaching someone within the organization, right? Is that it will take a bit of repetition for them to begin to own the knowledge so they can repeat it without guidance or direction. Okay. So one time won't do it unless the systems are in place through, you know, automation, workbooks, manuals, videos, and this type of thing. Right. And so repetition over and over and over, you need to condition the animal over 100 times to teach a new behavior. Now, a lot of the times people are like, well, my dog will do it sometimes. And that's because the animal is just mirroring and reflecting the person's lack of follow through. So the second letter is C for consistency, is we must follow through. And that's true with leadership as well. If we give a command and if we say something, we will follow through with it. If we're saying something about disciplinary, once you go there, you got to follow through with it. If you make a promise on a promotion or something else, an incentive, you got to follow through with it. You have to be consistent and that makes you reliable. And then people begin to trust you and feel safe with you and you begin to earn respect. But with a dog, if you give a command, you must follow through with it. Meaning, you know, I say what I mean and I mean what I say and I will follow through. And if you won't, the animal will not take you seriously and your dog will listen to you sometimes. That's because you follow through sometimes. So if you want the animal to be reliable, you've got to follow through and be consistent. Now, the third one, Travis, is T for timing. What we know through science, it's a study called Pavlov's Law, is that we have 1 second to reward or correct a behavior with a dog. Now, so let's say we're teaching the dog to do a spin, and the dog spins, and then I go in the house and then grab the treat and then give it to the animal after they came to me. Now, I just rewarded for come command, not the spin. For the animal to make the correlation of what they did right, the treat must, or the reward, needs to come within 1 second of whatever the behavior was that you will get more of. Okay, so in the instance of spin, and I'm teaching it for the first time, as soon as that head breaks over the shoulder, I'm going to give a reward. It's the approximation towards the end result that I want. Okay, so when it comes to timing, we have 1 second. Now, this is relevant, and I talked to psychologists about this, and they said it works with humans as well. They said, if you want to give a compliment, if you want to give positive reinforcement to a human being for a job well done, and you wait, you know, a week after they did well, it doesn't land. It has to be timely, which I thought was really cool and interesting. But I saw you smile, Travis, so I'd love to hear your feedback on that.
Well, I'm just picturing raising kids a little bit and something else as well that I'm going to touch on. But like raising kids, you know, you're a first time parent. Here's the deal. You're not going to get it right. You're going to get it wrong. You're going to say something like, if you ever do this again, I'm going to paddle your butt. Right. They do the thing, you paddle their butt, and you realize that maybe paddling their butt was the wrong thing to do, but you said you were going to do it. You follow through, you provide that consistency for your children. And maybe, you know, you change up the punishment next time. If you realize that was just not in alignment with my beliefs, my follow, you know, whatever the thing is, right? You can change it for next time. But if you said you were going to do it, you have to do it. And then you were talking about Pavlov's Law of training people. My son and I, our kids connect over different TV shows, right? My daughter and I, we watch How I Met Your Mother. My son and I, we watch Big Bang Theory. And there's an episode where Sheldon is training Penny with a cookie or a brownie or a Milky Way or something. Like, she does something good. And she's like, good job, Penny. You know, Milky Way treat, essentially. And she's like, thank you. And she leaves. And Leonard, the roommate's like, I know what you're doing. He's like, what am I doing? He's like, you're giving her rewards based on good behavior. Oh, so you are paying attention. Hilarious, hilarious episode of Big Bang Theory. But it's true. It's so true. Think about it. When you work your tail off at work and they come to you with like an end of the year bonus, and you get something like Jelly of the Month Club. Well, it had nothing to do with what you did 5 months ago. It doesn't land well. It's not relevant. And nor is it a good reward for what it is that you did. So when people go do a huge gala in the nonprofit world and you come back Monday morning, usually you're wore out, but that's the day that you need to recognize the team that put this together. You got to recognize the volunteers, and you got to send out your gratitude letters out to the donors and anyone that helped put this together. Cause if you don't do it Monday, it's not going to land well. Like, oh, what did your boss tell you 3 weeks later? You had to get this done today, or you couldn't go on a vacation. And so you get the letter saying thank you. And you're like, why am I getting this 3 weeks later? It doesn't land well. It applies across the board in the animal world, in television on Big Bang Theory, and in your nonprofit as well.
There you go. And well said. And the last one is R. And that's, we've touched on it, and that's for reward. Right. So in order to get more behavior of what you want, just like on the show, you need to give a reward. And again, we already talked about the motivator that that animal wants, the motivator that that person wants. And that's how you're going to get more repeated behavior. And we also talked about, you know, whatever they're incentivized by, it needs to be, you know, precise, not what we assume that they want, not what we want them to want, but what they truly want. That's the reward and motivator we need to be giving and leveraging.
Yeah. How do they want to be recognized? There's always the story of some world-class salesman that gets recognized at the annual banquet and wins some kind of cash stipend. And he goes up there and the face is blank and he doesn't obviously care about getting the reward or the award. And you're like, I don't understand. Like, this is our annual awards banquet. I don't understand. This guy is number one year after year after year, but we do this thing and like, he does not care. He's not interested. It doesn't land with him. Well, this goes back to leadership, right? What do you know about this person? What is the thing that really motivates them? What is the thing that really makes an impact? In this person's case, it was about his family. Everything he did, everything he worked for, everything he wanted was for his family. So then next year came around and he won the award again, but the leadership team had coordinated with the family for them to be there, to be part of the thing. And then the award was family related. They talked to the spouse and figured out what they really wanted. And he ended up winning basically the trip of a lifetime for him and his family. Well, let me tell you how well that landed. It completely crushed it. But if they didn't, all those years that they didn't understand the person and didn't really know him, they missed the mark year after year after year. No matter how good this guy did, he got the same BS reward that he wasn't interested in. And not that it's not a good award. That's not a good reward. It's not their reward. Just like the five love languages, if you're a person of affirmation and the other person keeps giving you gifts, it's not going to hit the same. You don't care about the stinking gifts. You want the words, or you want the touch, or you want the service, or you want whatever the other one is. I'm not the expert on the five love languages. I only have to know two of them that matter in my life. So there.
I love that, Travis, because you know it's kind of bringing it all back full circle as it relates to being innovative. And if we just keep doing it the way we've done it, well, we can see where that takes us, or brings us to be, right? Because it may not take us very far. And it's a matter of being creative, curious, a place of discovery and innovative. And what's so cool for all of us is it can start right now in this moment. It can start tomorrow. It can start tonight. We don't have to wait, you know, years just because we've always been doing it a certain way. It can start with a thought, have the awareness of thought, right? And then follow it up with some action, which I think is cool that organization did have that insight to eventually get there. And that's the inspiration that shows that, yeah, at any moment we can make a change. And so that's cool that they were willing to be and do something different.
Here's the deal. Ryan brought it up that you have the power to decide to change today. And I want you to hear this. I don't care where you're at in life. I don't care if you're listening to this because you're a friend of mine. And you're like, fine, Travis, I'll listen to your podcast. I don't care if you're in the nonprofit world. If you're like, oh, Ryan Matthews is doing something other cool. What's he doing on a nonprofit podcast? It doesn't mean, I don't care how you got here. But if you're listening to this, you have the power within you, just like Carl Rogers understood that the answer was inside the person. The advice didn't work. Telling them what to do didn't fix anything. It's within you to decide that today's a new day and you can do whatever it takes to create and design the life that you want to live. If you are in a bad place, if you're in a place of scarcity, of survival mode, or in a bad situation, you can get out, you can leave, you can put down the cheeseburger, you can go to the gym. I hear going more than once is advantageous. You can decide to do whatever the thing is that you want to do today. Don't wait. Don't wait for an invitation. If you're waiting for your invitation, this is it. You're invited to take control of your life. You're invited to say, yes, I'm going to be nice to myself and enforce my boundaries. It's yes, you are invited to hold high standards and expect people to get there. Yes, you can be a better leader, a dynamic leader. You can do something different today. And I want you to know that. Thank you. Where can people get a hold of you, Ryan? They want to know more. I know they can hop on YouTube, TEDx, Ryan Matthews, and hear either of your wonderful talks. Or where else can they find you?
Yeah, well, really, I just want to be a resource, and I want to serve people. Connect with me on social media at I am Ryan Matthews. That's two T's and an S at the end. And they can find me at worldofdogtraining.com. And for your audience, I'd love to give them a freebie as well, if you're open to that.
Oh, we love freebies at the nonprofit.
Okay, cool. Thing. So what I'd love to do, especially those that have a service dog nonprofit, is I want to offer a free call with me. So I normally charge $500 for a lesson. I want nothing from your audience, a free lesson. And so a free call, should I say. And so to get that, really easy, email me Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at worldofdogtraining.com. Again, that's for anyone of your audience, if they want to tap into anything dog related. Especially those that have the service dogs. I've done consulting for service dog organizations. Love to see how we can streamline, help them make more money and serve more people and do more good.
That's wonderful, Ryan. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.